I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Are black and brown renters being denied access to housing based on biased algorithms? A renter screening company says it's not its issue because it doesn't make renting decisions. Wyoming wants to phase out electric vehicles by 2035. We don't think lawmakers propose this resolution with a straight face as they attempt to make a point to states like California and New York. And is all fair in love in AI? A Silicon Valley man uses AI to write and illustrate a children's book, and let's just say the reaction by many was visceral. We've got all this and more for you in this Martin Luther King Day episode of The Tech Job. From Columbus, Ohio, I'm your host, Rob Dunwood.
And coming out of Philly, it's your girl, Tech Life Steph.
And out of Atlanta, this is Terrence Gaines, a.k.a. Brother Tech, a.k.a. it don't matter what angle you're looking at it. It's whack in any angle.
See, what had happened was...
Yeah, no, I was referring to that MLK statue that they erected in Boston that somehow...
looks ridiculous.
So here's the thing. I saw someone post a picture of what the inspiration was. And then it's like, oh, okay, now I see it. And it's one of those things to where once you see it, then you see it. But until the picture was posted, it looked like something else. And it's like, they had a bunch of kids, but I don't think that's what, you know, Martin and Coretta wanted, you know, the world to see. You know, there was some private moments is what it looked like to me. So
he tried. Bless his heart. Mm-hmm. He definitely tried.
Anyway, we are doing a tech show on Martin Luther. As many of our folks used to say, Martin Luther the King. I don't know why the was in there. So I got to ask.
That was like Bernie Mac or Cedric Vinner. Like it was, I think it was Bernie Mac that first said that in a stand up routine. Or Cedric the Entertainer, one of the two.
And it's been around. That's been around. I don't even know if you call that a colloquialism, but I know it's been around for a minute. But I got to ask y'all, we all are roughly around the same age. Did you have grandparents who had the pictures? They had three. They had a picture of Jesus, John F. Kennedy, and Martin Luther King in the house.
No.
Am I the only one?
You're the only one. Well, I don't know. I can't speak for Terrence, but no.
Jesus, yes.
Jesus, yep.
My mom, over every door, she put a picture of, what's that angel? Some sort of, you protected, you know, as you leave the house or something like that. I had to look it up, but... No, Martin Luther King, Jesus, and JFK. Such a weird combination.
It was. And I remember asking, it's like, why we got them white? Because I didn't realize who John F. Kennedy was when I was little. And it's like, what? Well, who's that white dude? I didn't know who that was. I don't know. And, you know, it ain't no shame. And it's like, I know I'm not the only one in the world because I've seen it in other places. But those are the pictures that my grandfolks, you know, they had and how they wasn't necessarily, I call it a triumvirate. It wasn't like they was like three right along with each other, but you could find JFK, a picture, you could find many pictures of Jesus and you'd always find one of Martin, you know, in the house. Here's another thing I will ask. When y'all was little and the I Dream of Speech came, you know, would always come on. I think NBC used to do it all the time. This is back before you had 1942 cable channels. So you kind of was a captive audience to watch it. Did your family stop and listen regardless of what you was doing when that speech came on? Yeah, that was another thing for me too.
I don't even remember that being on. Like at any point in time. I just don't even remember that being a thing, like them preempting programming to run that speech.
I don't know that it was like preempting programming. It would just be like, it just, oh wow, that speech is on. It was usually like on a, and this was probably before the holiday was even official. This is just around his birthday that I remember, because you know, this is how it was for me. We had the big console TV that didn't work, and then you had the newer square TV to set on top of the console TV, and that's what we used to watch. You know, my folks was into it. I had to you know, remember speeches and all that kind of stuff. So that was just me. But it is Martin Luther King Day today. We're doing the show, but we are a tech show, so we're going to talk about some tech, because there's been quite a bit of it that's been going on over the last week. Before we get into it, though, I want to let everyone know who's listening. If you'd like to support the Tech John, you can head over to patreon.com/thetechjohn. That is patreon.com/thetechjohn. And we have multiple tiers over there. Any one of those tiers helps support us, help us do the thing that we do, and put up some of the cost of what it costs to put this stream up. So, you know, always want to, you know, give folks an opportunity to support, because I actually have people who ask directly, hey, how can we support your show? Patreon is probably the best way. One of the other ways is to rock with us on social media. And also head over to our Discord. That's where we're starting to have conversations. So we have opened up our Discord. It's open up to everybody now. So if you just head over to thetechjohn.com/Discord, you'll be able to, you know, get an invite and hop into that community over there. So that being said, let's go ahead and jump into some tech. And the first one, Terrence, you just stuck this one in like right at the last minute. And I wanted to bring it up because it's something that it is a problem, and it's something that Martin Luther King used to talk about all the time. But, you know, you asked about are algorithms biased against Black renters. I don't think you were really asking the question because you didn't know the answer, but it was just you phrased the statement in the form of a question. But SafeRent, I read through this. I read two different articles on what SafeRent is doing in the court case that they're going through. Mm-hmm. And what it looks like to me is that folks will always try to find a loophole to be racist. Tell me I'm wrong on that, but it looks like they are searching hard for a loophole to continue the racism.
No.
Am I missing it?
Well, no, that's basically what happening. They're throwing this SafeRent, I think it's the name of it. There's two kinds. Mm-hmm. There was one is called SafeRent, and then there's another one that's used as well. And what struck me as surprising. What I wasn't surprised about is that Black people who are trying to rent Airbnbs, Vrbo, vacation homes, whatever the case may be, were being discriminated against possibly because of their race. What was surprising was the response to the people who were actually doing it. And basically, for example, I put down this quote, SafeRent, which is the company. Basically, what they do is they screen potential renters. And if I am a renter of my house and I want to, quote unquote, screen somebody to make sure whatever the case may be, I can run their information through this screener and it'll give me information about them, whether it be credit score, whether it be criminal background history, whatever the case, past rental, you know, claims, whatever the case may be. In addition to that, of course, it gives my age. I'm assuming it gives my gender. I'm assuming it gives me my race. So the story starts off about a lady who is a part of a class action lawsuit against SafeRent that is using algorithms to screen tenants. And of course, they are suing because that's against the Fair Housing Act, because the Fair Housing Act says you cannot discriminate from people based on their gender, based on their age, based on their sex and their racial background, racial identity. So what's surprising about this is the excuse that they gave. And the, like you said, the loophole is SafeRent put out a quote. They said they argued that the algorithms used to screen tenants aren't subject to the Fair Housing Act because the scores only advise landlords and don't make the decisions. So what SafeRent is saying is we ain't the racist ones. We're just passing along the information to the tenants. I mean, the owners of the property, it's the owners who are being racist. we just kind of helping them be racist, but we're not really being racist is how I got it. So I just thought that was interesting, as it's like, yes, you know, there's still racial discrimination, there's still profiling, there's still bias. It's just moved into algorithms. And like Rob said, they're just using loopholes as to why they decide who they want to rent against. In this case, in these cases, in this story that I read, it just had so happened to be black folks.
Yeah. And when I read through this, the
for so, anybody that is not watching, I'm holding up Algorithms of Oppression, How Search Engines Reinforce Racism. This was written a while back by Sophia Noble, but ain't much changed.
so yeah, and it's the interesting thing is that this was a crafted response. This is something that they thought about. Oh yeah, you know, here's how we're gonna get away with it. We ain't being racist. We're just enabling racists to be racist. Mm-hmm. So, you know, so that you know, you can't even say that's us by proxy. We ain't got it. We're just giving you the data.
When they customers, that's just a loophole to me.
That is just a loophole. That is just a loophole to me.
Under the bus. They say,
well, it was such a, it was just such a weak cop out. I mean, like, you know,
No. It was just the truth. They were just honest. They told you exactly what they were doing. And now it's weak. Their policies are weak, but they told you exactly what they were doing. But I'm just sitting here thinking, it's like, you know, it's 2023. You are a company that ultimately you want people to spend money with your organization, to generate revenue for you. It just seems like you would, even if it's not true, it seems like you would fake a better response than that. Right. Because literally what they are telling you is that, no, this is not a problem for the Fair Housing Act, because we're just giving racists the opportunity to express it with data. We're not actually the ones doing it. Therefore, it's not on us. And, you know, I am editorializing quite a bit in this, because this one just gets in my crawl. But it's like, seriously, you know, they literally think that you can just say, we're going to use all these factors to discriminate against folks, but as long as we're not the one actually making the decision, it's cool. Because as I was saying a second ago, is that when I'm looking at this and I'm looking at the, it seems like she's not the only woman. It's a class, you know, class action, but the woman is like cited or quoted in, you know, in this article, she showed, what was it, 16 years of
punctual rent payments.
Mm-hmm. And this and that and the other. And she was actually able to, you know, qualify for a, you know, for a rent that was, it cost more. It was just not in necessarily the desired neighborhood that she wanted to be in. So that just got me to thinking, it's like, oh, you can go over here and pay more money to not be, you know, to be in a neighborhood that we don't necessarily want you to be in. But in these neighborhoods, we've got to figure out something other than 16 years. You've actually not missed, you know, a rent payment, have not been tardy, have not been late. That's not good enough. And, you know, like I said, it's just a loophole. It's just a loophole. And it's like,
and just coincidentally, the Fair Housing Act was, put together and passed in 1968, a week after the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. So happy Martin Luther King Day.
Yeah. I'm not surprised. I mean, I don't really have a whole lot to say about this. It's pretty much par for the course, I think. America.
Yeah, this is... I was just surprised that y'all actually said that. You know, you said the quiet part out loud. I was not expecting that response. I was expecting all kind of hemming and hawing and all these kind of things. Like, nope, not our problem. We're not the one making the decisions. That's literally, you know, what they're saying. But let's move into another story that is, it's kind of funny to me, actually. And I think, you know, we're going to talk about a few things with just how the world is moving, how technology is making things move, and how it affects society, how it affects people's jobs and stuff like that. But the first one that I wanted to bring up was the state of Wyoming. They want to phase out all sales of new electric vehicles, all EVs, by 2035. So let me repeat that again. They're not trying to phase out fuel combustion engines by 2035. They want to phase out the sale of electric vehicles in the state of Wyoming by 2035. And the reason they want to do this is because Wyoming is a, you know, much of their industry is based off of fossil fuel. So, you know, their lawmakers are coming up with this. At best, it is going to fail miserably. At worst, they're just kind of poking fun at the situation. They're kind of making a joke out of this because, if this thing passes, it's not actually something that's going to really happen. It's voluntary. They're asking businesses and individuals to no longer purchase EVs. So because of that, it has no teeth in it, you know, whatsoever. But what they're doing is they're poking at states like New York, like California, that are actually coming out and saying that by 2035, we will no longer sell gas combustion engine vehicles in these states. So they're kind of just trying to make a point on it. I wanted to get you guys' take on just the comical nature of this, because when you think about it, it's not even comical.
It's a waste of government resources when you talk about the fact that taxpayer dollars are paying these people's salaries. And this is the type of thing that y'all are, you know, up at the state capitol trying to legislate it. It's not even largely symbolic. It's all symbolic. And it's just, you know, a petty, passive aggressive way to try to thumb your nose, for climate change deniers, to try to thumb their nose at states that are trying to be proactive and get ahead of the fact that, you know, our planet is going to look a lot different in 10 to 20 years. And so we should try to do something about that on the front
right
end.
Now.
Yeah, exactly. And it's disgusting to me. It really is just a misuse of government resources. You know, I'm sure there are plenty other things happening in Wyoming that require government intervention and legislation and things like that. And this is just not one of them. I was really disappointed. And I mean, I don't know why, because politics being what it is, but you know, those citizens of Wyoming should have a big problem with this. They really, really should. Cause it's some bullshit.
Right. And my thing is, so the analogy I can think of is when you read or hear about a criminal going through all this work to do a crime, and people normally say, if you would have took all those brains and took all of that planning and took all of that ingenuity and put it into doing something good, mm-hmm. you wouldn't even have to be messing around trying to do crime. So I take that analogy and apply it to this. Instead of y'all trying to legislate EVs out of Wyoming, actually, what you probably could be spending better time on, your ingenuity, your thinking, is to how to switch or the only best way I can think of is switch Wyoming into a more, or at least figure out how to
make the two coexist. You know, they talked about not having the infrastructure and the chargers and, you know, all of that, but like maybe
now's
make that shift.
Right.
And make that shift and all those people that you're trying to support. And again, I mean, I get it. You know, Wyoming's like the eighth largest, state for fuel, you know, oil, fossil fuel production and consumption and all that, whatever. And so I get that you don't want your base to lose their jobs and all the rest of that stuff. But like to your point, Terrence, figure out how to make the transition. You know, right. We need people to build chargers. We need people to service chargers. We need people to do all those different things.
Put some solar farms on yet all that land that y'all ain't using
make some more wind farms or something, more jobs,
businesses being built.
Yeah, but to waste time doing this, it's
a joke. They're using, as you said, taxpayer dollars to go and do this, because it wasn't like just one wild card senator from Wyoming. And these are state, you know, this is the state government, not the, you know, the folks, you know, that are in DC, but it wasn't just one. It was several of them that have signed on to this. And who knows? Like I said, it purely is just, this is going to make our base feel good that we're doing this. But when you actually go and you look at it, it's like, well, wait a minute. You're not actually banning anything. You're just hoping that your citizens and the companies in your state will no longer actually purchase these type of things. So when I look at it like that, I was like, at best, this is stupid. I mean, it's just like, this is just a dumb thing to do. But I do want to ask this question because this is a problem. What is the responsibility, if any, of, you know, of society or the government to actually, you know, to really think deeply about how changing industries are going to affect people's livelihoods? Because that is what a big argument is. It is not the main argument, is not the only argument, but it is a big argument that if we are a big oil producer and we stop doing that because no one's using oil anymore, then we have a lot of people who had really nice paying jobs that are no longer going to have those jobs. And, you know, Stephanie, you started to go down this, you know, down this trail of, well, you could take the time now instead of coming up with these ridiculous laws that will never pass to actually put, you know, legislation in place that maybe is going to do like job training or figure out how you can actually, you know, be like there is a lot of land in Wyoming that doesn't have people on it. Maybe you can, you know, do wind farms. Maybe you can do solar farms, those kind of ideas. You know, what is the responsibility of, you know, of society to ultimately think about how you move into this? We're going to talk about AI in a second. And it's the same kind of themes. Like, you know, what is the responsibility of society to say, hey, if we do this, these jobs are going to go away.
Well, same as like, where are all the coal jobs right now? There were millions of coal miners all across the country at one point in this country until we realized coal was not going to be a viable long-term solution for energy production in America. And now, you know, those people probably transitioned to oil or natural gas or whatever, but now it's time to transition to something else. I mean, right. You know, change is a part of life and it's incumbent upon all of us, but I think upon our government most especially to help people through these transitions. At the same time, making sure that our country and this planet is prepared.
Right.
Exactly. Prepared for what's to come, in regards to climate change.
Mm-hmm. They just maintaining the status quo is never
going to work.
It's not sustainable. Eventually, you're going to figure out a way to smoothly transition into the future, or you're going to be dragged kicking and screaming or get left behind. Choose which one you want to be.
Yeah, I remember. I can't think if this was before we actually went on a little holiday hiatus, or it might have been right, or if it was during, or if it was right before. But there are scientists who essentially put energy into a system and then got more energy out of it. I'm bastardizing the complete story, but ultimately, fusion doesn't look like, you know, cold fusion at that doesn't look like it is this unattainable thing like it did maybe 2-3 months ago, because there are literally, you know, experiments that have worked and have been repeated to where they are eventually going to figure out how they can actually make a lot of really, really clean energy, you know, relatively inexpensively. Is it going to be 5 years away, 10 years away? We don't know, but we do know that this is something that is being worked on. So you would think that the fossil fuel industry is saying, we know that eventually some scientist is going to figure out how to make this work. Let's get down with that science so that we have a pivot point. But that doesn't seem to be what we do. It seems like what we want to do is like, no, we're going to do we're going to invest billions into just fighting the inevitable. Like I said, it's lunacy to think that you're going to ban EVs when Earth is telling you that's where it's going. It's like, I don't know what the folks are thinking, you know, why they're not thinking, you know, this through, but that is not a bet you're ultimately going to win in the long run. So I just like, I wonder what, you know, society needs to do. I wonder what governments should be doing to try to stem that tide so that, you know, this person is working in a, you know, if they're working in a coal mine, if they're working in a, you know, basically if they're working in fossil fuels and we know that that's going to hopefully go away at some point, well, how do we transition them into other things?
And it doesn't have to go away. And it doesn't have to go away completely. It just can't be the main source, especially if we know it is poisoning the planet. whether directly or indirectly. It can't be the only thing. We have to have alternatives. We have to have multiple sources in order to keep this thing moving.
And at the end of the day, the government has no problem letting economies die if necessary. I'm born and raised right next to Braddock, Pennsylvania, which was a hub of steel for America. And nobody had any problem letting Braddock die on the vine, quite literally, when that mill, well, it's not closed completely, but there's probably a skeleton crew of people that work there now. So let's not act like this is, you know, some altruistic thing to keep people with jobs and good paying jobs and stuff. It has nothing to do with the people that are actually working in these industries. It has to do with the companies that are getting the revenue. So that's all I'm gonna say about this.
And I'm on the other side of that steel belt from where you grew up. There were in my small hometown. I believe that the height of, where I'm from, it might have been 80,000 people, but there were 7 steel mills. There's one that is still there that runs at probably 15% of the capacity that it did in the 80s. The other 6 have actually shut down or been converted into doing other things. But that city that was 80 some odd thousand people is now like 34,000 because literally all those jobs have just gone. And what I remember, about that time was that they weren't losing them to innovation. They were losing them to places outside of the United States. Mm-hmm. And it just seems like back then it's like, oh, well, you know, it's about the profits is, you know, this is how we're going to remain profitable. That it makes, you know, it makes more sense to get that steel from China. It makes more sense to get that steel from, you know, wherever else you're getting it outside of here. And there, don't get me wrong. It's not like this was like, just easy for them to do. There were political, there was politics in it back then, just like there's politics in this now. But it's just interesting to me that when it was about making money, it was, oh, we got to do this because this is just what, this is what makes best sense. It is best for you to not have that job making steel here. It's best for us to send that job somewhere else to where we don't have to have the safety rules and all the things that we have here. So the steel can be less, less expensive. And they ultimately, what do we know? Steel mills are a fraction of what they used to be. This is a little different because it's like, there are other things you can do. You can't export energy independence. It's got to be here. They're not going to put solar farms in a country 6,000 miles away and ship the power back. So you need to build that stuff here. Those are high skilled jobs that you could train people to do. They're not going to, they make the solar panels in other places, but you know what? You know, the United States is a big country. You can train a lot of people how to build solar panels, how to build wind farms, how to do that and keep that kind of stuff here. And I'm always surprised that that's never the default to people that are America first. Well, why not be America first in the stuff to where, Earth is going? It's like, to me, it just seems like you would have, a lot of opportunity if that's where we were to go.
Because that's not what the companies say, Rob.
Ain't no money in it.
Is that what it is?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So y'all, we talked about AI last week. I think, we spent a fair amount of time on, ChatGPT. And this story, I was waiting for it to happen. And I thought it might take
a couple weeks. It didn't take a couple weeks. It literally took a couple days from when we were on last week. But you know, Steph, I think you stuck this one in here. Is, you know, is it all fair? You know, is, you know, how did you write this? Is it all,
is fair, all
fair
in love and AI,
or not? Nah? And you know, I'll let you tell the story. But essentially, a young man wrote a children's book completely with AI. Well, he didn't write it.
He didn't write it.
He provided the prompts.
He used AI to come up with a children's book and also to illustrate it as well. So he used ChatGPT to come up with the text, the actual story. And he used another AI thing called, what is the name of it? Let me. Midjourney is an AI tool that generates images, text to image, to come up with the illustrations for the book. It was supposed to just be for a few of his friends, but he ended up going on Amazon on KDP, Kindle Direct Publishing, and uploaded it to Kindle, to KDP, Amazon KDP, and sold a few copies. And so now the backlash has come because he did a whole Twitter thread on the fact that he did this. He was quite proud of himself. And it does seem like he was only trying to showcase the technology and kind of highlight this is what could be done using this technology. However, the internet being what it is, the backlash was swift and severe. Because what he is doing is, first of all, it's low key. Do we say it's dishonest? I don't know. It's disingenuous at best.
In his case, I don't think so, because he was upfront and said exactly what he was doing, how he was doing it from the beginning. So for him, it was more of the, wow, I think I could actually do this with AI, and then told the story about it as he was doing, almost like he did this thing in public.
But this is almost like hackers who hack a system, and instead of saying, hey, Microsoft, we got an issue. I need to work with you because I was able to exploit X, Y, and Z. Let's come to you and figure out a solution so we can then figure out a way to best plug it for to make sure nobody's data get lost. Maybe nobody's information gets stolen. Make sure nobody gets put out, whatever the case may be. And then Microsoft and them team up. They come up with a plan and then they fix this thing. Right. What a lot of hackers are doing is they will hack Microsoft and then go to internet and go to Twitter, go to Facebook, go to the tech articles and publish this story about them being able to hack Microsoft. And then they get this, their 15 minutes of fame, right? Because if you do it the first way, you may not get any fame because Microsoft then put out a patch and say, we've patched this X, Y, and Z. They may give the dude a byline. They may say thanks to the guy who originated. They may not. You know, this kind of reminds me of that, to where instead of this dude saying, hey, you know, let me come up with this, create this book to highlight the dangers or highlight, you know, what can be done with this ChatGPT. And maybe let me work with, you know, a library, or let me work with a school, or let me work with, you know, government, or whatever the case may be, to kind of highlight how this can be used and we better watch out for it. He went to Twitter and got some popularity. And then on the back end, like you said, after the heat came, according to the story, he plans to donate additional copies to his local library after earning some royalties. Now, he didn't make a whole bunch of money on the thing, but it, you know, the back end is kind of like, oh, you know, let me show that I was trying to do this in good faith. When he blew up on Twitter, good or bad. And I think in our day, people are trying to get that. I'm trying to get put on. How do I get put on?
I don't even necessarily know that he was doing it for that reason.
I don't think so either.
Yeah, I think he went viral and he didn't know, he wasn't expecting to go viral. But I think it speaks to a larger issue around using AI for this type of thing, especially when it comes to the image part of it, because these platforms like Midjourney, like DALL-E, are using actual artist work to train their AI. So the idea that you're using artist work uncredited, uncompensated to train your AI. And now you're cutting them out of the process altogether by generating your own imagery and your own artwork. That's kind of a problem. That's a problem. That's definitely a problem.
Yeah, I'm with you, Stephanie, on this. I don't think that this gentleman thought at all about this. I think that number one, he works in Silicon Valley, lives in San Francisco. This is, you know, he's a tech guy, for lack of a better word. This was probably something that, oh, these are cool. I wonder what I can do with it. Let me go play and see what I can come up with. Oh, I was able to create a children's book that actually reads fairly well. I was able to actually get, you know, these images created all by AI. All I had to do was just figure out how to write the right prompts. I think that's really what he was trying to do. As right. I said, but the book was really just for his friends.
But again,
the problem is that it's like, you know, how the internet has come form, because there's just all these ramifications to what you're doing that he didn't necessarily think about. And I'm not going to make it say that it's his problem solely to have thought about it, but he's first. So he's right. He's the one getting the heat.
And that's the thing. When you put some shit out there on the internet, you have to be mindful. That's what I always teach until that three tweet. You have to be mindful of how it's going to be perceived and how you may get responded to, even though you think just your followers are going to see it, or I'm not trying to blow up, or I'm not trying, whatever he thought. Once it's on the internet, you don't have any control over it. You lose control over the content once you put it out there.
I link this story as well about CNET. I'll just read here. CNET is being very upfront with how and when it's using AI Assist. They've actually given it a name, AI Assist, in its articles. And it's been doing this, I want to say, going back since, sometime in November when they really started pushing these AI assisted articles. And the way they're explaining it is, well, we want to assist our, you know, our writers, our journalists, that's from having to do the mundane work of that's journalism.
You trying to get rid of half your staff.
Now, what they try to do is they basically try to make sure they don't get none of this heat that this dude in San Francisco is getting, because it's probably coming for him. And they are now, making it very clear when these things are AI assisted generated articles and all that kind of stuff. But I don't know if either of you have played with ChatGPT. I actually just, okay, let me go see what this is. Let me see what it is like to type into this thing and see the kind of answers I can get. I don't know that this genie is being put back in that bottle. I don't know if that's going to be the case.
Unfortunately, I looked at one of the articles that was written, one of the CNET articles that was written, by AI Assist. There were a few interesting grammatical things that whoever they claim edited it. Now, that's the part that I don't believe. They're like, you know, nothing we do is going to get published until it gets edited by a human and, you know, fact checked and proofread. And I'm like, clearly you didn't do it on this article, because there was a spelling error and a grammatical kind of contextual. There was a word that didn't belong in a place where it was put. And I'm assuming the AI put it there, erroneously. So clearly you need better editors, or it's not being edited at all, like you say it will be. And I just think it's a ploy to cut your staff and raise your bottom line by cutting your staff, because you can't tell me you're not going to lay people off now if you have a whole chatbot that writes your articles.
You can't tell me you're not going to use the chatbot to write articles. And if you can put the articles out there and people read them and you still get the clicks and you still get all the benefits that you would have to go through a normal writer, ain't no way you can tell me you ain't then not going to use writers.
Exactly. And especially if you could get it done in 2 minutes, 3 minutes, however long it takes you to type the correct prompt and the form, like y'all not fooling nobody. Y'all not fooling nobody.
So here's my question. What do we do? Like I said, you know, just stemming from the Wyoming story about them not wanting EVs to be sold after 2035. What does society do? What do governments do? Because, as I said, I don't think this genie is going to be put back in the bottle. And here's what we know about companies. They're going to maximize profits beyond pretty much everything else. I'm not saying every company on the planet is like that, but the majority of them are. Most it's profit are. First. They're That's going right. to make money where they can make money. So if you know what, we used to have like entry level people in the newsroom. We had eight of them and they had to come up and write these lists. Type post. They had to come up and write these things. So we're literally all they were going to do is go to Google, research the information, and then type it out. Well, we had eight of them. Well, you know what? Now we don't need eight. We only need two. And those two don't have to actually do any of the writing. They just need to make it seem like it wasn't written by a computer, make sure that it was edited by a human so that we don't get this heat.
Right.
That is where CNET is right now. It's not like that's where they're Basically, going. That's where they are.
Absolutely.
Well, you know, CNET is, you know, they even say in the article that they are kind of on the front end. They are on the bleeding edge of technology and using technology to do what they do because that's what they cover. But they're not the only companies that's going to do this. You're going to see other institutions that are going to start doing these type of things. So my question is, how do we ultimately adapt to that? Because like I said, I don't think the genie's going back in the bottle. It's like he's out. And he likes it. So
I will say, just as a counterpoint, GPT-0, it's GPT-0.me, a student, I forget where he goes to school, but he developed a platform that can detect if AI was used to write something. So for schools or, you know, teachers out there listening right now, if you need to know if something was written by AI, GPT-0 is a way that you can do that.
We talked a little bit about ChatGPT last week, and one of the things we talked about how I believe it is New York City schools, which is the largest school system in America, they banned OpenAI's IP addresses so that students can't use devices while in school that would allow them to get to ChatGPT. What was really interesting, and I know I'm repeating myself, but it is just a really interesting point to make, is that their concern wasn't so much that students are going to be cheating. We know that's going to happen. It's like, there are several articles out since we last talked about it, but one of them says that, you know, ChatGPT is going to be like a calculator. Teachers, you know, your students are using calculators except for when you're standing over their shoulder, making sure that they're not. That's just how you now have to operate.
But the thing about a calculator is, at least for now, you still have to know how to do the problem. Coming from an engineer, calculus ain't getting done by no calculator. No. You know what I mean? You still need to know how to do it, how to solve a derivative, or integral or whatever. You need to know a formula. You need to know what variables go in for those different letters, what numbers should be substituted. Like, you know, this is not the same. I get the analogy.
I agree because
this is definitely not the same as a calculator.
Many a math student has failed with a perfectly functioning TI-85 calculator.
And my hand is raised as someone who had the top of the line TI, you know, that joint ain't going to help you if you don't know how to do the problem. So I
will say some things that, make me say, maybe this isn't as negative as what I am thinking it could be, because we're just getting hit right now. People cheating, people potentially losing jobs because you didn't pay them to draw something. You didn't pay them to write something. That's kind of what's dominating the news right now. But as I said, as I'm looking through what folks are trying to do with these large language model AIs, is just make doing your job easier. So, who is it? Microsoft. We talked last week. We said a billion. They changed it. It's 10 billion now that they're looking to invest into OpenAI. This stuff isn't going anywhere. But one of the things that I wonder is the prompt writing. Just like you have to have a level of knowledge, you have to have studied some to be able to use your TI calculator. to graph, to get that math problem right. You actually had to learn some math. And this has changed over time. Just like the way teachers teach math today with with computers where they are, with calculators where they are, is different than the way that they taught a lot of it, let's say in the 70s when these calculators were, it's like only the engineer, the person was working, a university and an engineer had that Hewlett Packard that cost, $300-$400 back in the 70s. If you learn how to write props correctly for these AIs, the information you can get back out of them is actually fairly impressive. So my question to you
is, what do you do with that information though? Are you using it for knowledge? Are you using it for personal growth? Or are you using it to get paid? People are going to use it to get paid.
Yes.
And then that kind of,
I think all of that is true.
Right.
And I think from a student perspective, even if you had some basic level knowledge of how to write a prompt, you still didn't do the work. You know what I mean? And that's the point. Like, the point is not necessarily, do you have enough information about a topic to write a good prompt? It's like, did you do the work? And when we remove that necessity from learning, and that's where I see, you talk about, well, what's society's, responsibility, what's government responsibility? I think our responsibility should be to our children to continue to figure out ways to help them think critically, and understanding how to write a good AI prompt is not critical thinking. Doing the work is part of that process. And the idea that you now don't have to know how to research anything or don't really have to, like, the idea that you only need to know how to write a good prompt is, I think, doing our young people a disservice.
So, yeah, I believe that the ability for folks to not have to learn anything is great with this. And so I want to see how education morphs around this over time, because I do believe I am not a big proponent of rote memorization. You can pick one of these things up. I'm holding my phone up for people who can't see me, who are listening. And I literally have, for lack of a better words, the wealth of written information that the world has ever had written down and digitized at my fingertips. So I don't need to remember what date this happened on. I don't need to remember how to get from point A to point B. I can ask something that can do it. How do we I guess the word I'm asking, I'm trying to look for the word, but how do we balance that to where you don't, there is not a need to memorize a lot of things anymore, because you can go to the bastion of all knowledge and just say, hey, what is the answer to this? And actually fairly, get a fairly, accurate answer. That doesn't necessarily mean that you don't know how to think. It just means that you didn't memorize what the state capitals of all 50 states were. Like, I'll use that as an example. How in your adult life does knowing what the state capitals are and what the original state capitals are for a state were? That's just rote memorization that you can just go research that and look it up. So I think that this is going to kind of get to that area as well.
Right. But when you type in, and I saw this, I think in one of the articles that we posted for this episode, what are the main themes of To Kill a Mockingbird? You know what I mean? Now you had to write an essay. You had to write an essay on the themes of To Kill a Mockingbird. Just because you know how to ask that question doesn't mean you know how to think critically to find those themes. Cause number one, you haven't read the book, because the chat is going to give you the essay answer anyway. And so you don't have to do that work. You know what I mean? And that's the problem that I think we are going to run into. We are going to have a generation of young people that don't know how to do that work.
Yeah. And if I'm honest, I didn't read To Kill a Mockingbird. I went and bought the Cliff Notes.
It was a great book. It was a fantastic
book. But I had to at least go get the Cliff Notes and read that with this, you don't even still had to do anymore. Something. You still had to do something. It's like I had to have the wherewithal to go get the Cliff Notes so that I could not get the D and try to get a C on the test for the book that I didn't read. I'm being facetious, but not really. So there is that. So like I said, I don't think this is going away. We talked about last week about, you know what, when search engines started coming out, there was a whole lot of encyclopedia salespeople sweating. And we don't really see encyclopedia salespeople anymore. What changes now with ChatGPT and these type of large language models?
I don't know if, to me, the jury's still out. I just think that this is getting a whole bunch of attention because it's new. Mm. And everybody in we as a society are looking for, and more importantly, back to my original point about the dude who wrote this book, who's going to be first? And I think with, EVs, with ChatGTP, a month ago, it was where you can draw it's ChatGTP, the AI, OpenAI, where it helps you.
Dolly.
Yeah, and all these things, mm-hmm. right? One, our attention span is short because of the internet. I just think this is getting a whole lot of attention because everybody's trying to be first. Microsoft putting $10 billion into this thing. It's like, all right, what we're not about to do is miss out on this. We may have missed out on smartphones. We no longer have Windows.
Smartphones, search engines.
Right.
We missed web browsers.
Nobody. We need to be first in something.
Microsoft missed out on it.
Right. And Microsoft's like, nope, what we're not going to do is miss out on this. So we're about to go all in. And I just think because it's new, I don't want to say it's going to level out. I just think that right now we're so in a rush to be first that we are, projecting, a lot of we're making a lot of assumptions about where this is going to go. And really, we don't know. This technology is what, a year old, maybe. And I mean, that it takes years.
Yeah, it's they've been working on this for years and years. ChatGPT.
I'm talking about the realization of it.
November 30th, this mm-hmm. Earth tilted on its axis around large language models mm-hmm. on November 30th when this came out. I don't know if he said this last week or not. It gained, I believe it was in 5 days. A million followers or a million users in 5 days. And then they started, running out things like, well, how long did it take Facebook? How long did it take Twitter? How long did it take TikTok? How long did it take some of these other things to get to, a million? I want to say Instagram was one of the fastest. This took 5 days to get to a million. So that's why we're hearing about it to the extent that we are. People were kind of, the end of the year is kind of the downtime for tech until you get to CES and all that new stuff comes out. So it's just like slow news cycle. This is what people were talking about. So I do agree with you on that, Terrence. I think that this is going to, it's not going away, but I think that you're going to see the fervor kind of die down after a while. And it'll kind of just be a thing until the next version comes out that does something great that makes people, kind of perk up and say, oh, wow, that's, it's doing something, new that I didn't know that it could do before. So, y'all, I'm looking at the clock. And even though we started our show a little bit late, we're not going to go late. So let's go ahead and wrap this up. We do want to say that, we are doing a spotlight, but this is not our regular kind of spotlight this week. It is Martin Luther King Day. Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, let's put all the respect on his name. And so our spotlight is going to be MLK. And as I said, when we started the show, I was one of those kids to where I had to recite speeches and stuff like that and, reenact things and stuff like that.
He was in church on MLK Day on Sunday.
Pretty much. Yes. Pretty much. This is before MLK was the actual holiday. This is like, you're talking late 70s, early 80s. So, I was that.
Had your little suit on and everything.
Yes, I did. I was that guy. And one of the greatest speeches that has ever been spoken is I Have a Dream speech. But that's what everybody goes to. And you look at it, it's like when I look at the tweets, it doesn't really matter what your political agenda is, what your, how you lean. You're going to get folks all the way from the far left all the way to the far right that are going to quote things from I Have a Dream out of context to make their point. But that being said, like I said, that is arguably one of the greatest speeches that has ever been delivered. Definitely, probably number one here in the United States. But here's the speech that I like to go to, and I'm not going to read an entire speech, but I do like to talk about this one. This was what Dr. King wrote for his lecture when he received the Nobel Prize for Peace back in 1964. So I'm just going to read a little bit here of what he had to say. Modern man has brought this whole world to an awe-inspiring threshold of the future. He has reached new and astonishing peaks of scientific success. He has produced machines that think and instruments that peer into the unfathomable ranges of interstellar space. He has built gigantic bridges to span the seas and gargantuan buildings to kiss the skies. His airplanes and spaceships have dwarfed distance, placed time in chains, and carved highways through the stratosphere. This is a dazzling picture of modern man's scientific technological progress. Yet in spite of these spectacular strides in science and technology, and we still unlimited ones to come, something basic is missing. There is a sort of poverty of spirit which stands in glaring contrast to scientific technological abundance. The richer we have become materially, the poorer we have become morally and spiritually. We have learned to fly the air like birds and swim the sea like fish, but we have not learned the simple art of living together as brothers. This was written 59 years ago, but still to be true. Completely honest, it could have been written 59 seconds ago because it rings as true today as it did, back then. I'm not going to be one of those people to say that we've made no progress, because we have made significant progress. When this was written, my father couldn't vote in certain states. Flat out. Today I can. That's never been an issue, for me. So there definitely are, things that it's better today than it was, but we are so far from the finish line with things that we need to do. One other point I wanted to make, and I'll bring you guys in on this, is that we've talked about this before. I believe it was back in episode 46, I think, when we talked about Nichelle Nichols. Martin Luther King was a science fiction head. He loved Star Trek. It was his favorite show. It was the only show that he allowed his children to watch, at night. And I know we talked about this before, but, Nichelle Nichols, she actually, is quoted for saying that a conversation with him kept her from quitting Star Trek after year one. So Star Trek wouldn't be what it would be if it weren't for, Martin Luther King. So with that, we're going to go ahead and wrap this week's show up. We did not have any new patrons this week. So I will once again say, for anyone who wants to become a patron, just head over to patreon.com/thetechjohn. That is the tech, JAWN. And until we meet again in a week's time, Stephanie, why don't you go ahead and tell the folks how to get at you.
You can follow me all around the web at Tech Life Steph.
And you can find me on the internet's all things at Brother Tech, SBROTHATECH.
And you can follow me on all things at Rob Dunwood. And also, remember, we just opened up our Discord to everybody. So if you want to holler at us over on Discord, head over to thetechjohn.com/Discord. Till we meet again in a week's time. Peace.
Peace. Hey.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.